Well, life can certainly be tricky, and we're going to have ups and downs. How do we navigate those together? And what's the best way to navigate that? And the truth is, success brings so much better opportunity, some more options, some more choices. We love success. And in fact, we want to aspire to success. When you think about chutes and ladders, though, there are some inherent downsides to success as well. Sometimes, while I'm on this rung of the ladder, I'm always focused on the next. And that can bring confidence. Look, I did it, I made it, I created this. If there's no greater sense of purpose, no greater sense of destiny, if everything's always about what I do, and there's not someone who's given me opportunities, how do I not get overconfident? How do I not have some degree of pride? Look what I made happen, look what I did. And more than that, when you get to the top of the rung, what do you do when you're at the top of all your goals, when you've accomplished all the things you hoped for? If there's no other rung to go to, then where does happiness come from if it's always about aspiring to the next rung? Where's my value come from if my value has always been about what I'm going to accomplish next? Same thing, even if you have the most successful life, there's often things that come our way we can't control. It's the medical report. Man, that was a shoot I didn't see coming. It's a relational break. You and your business partner had a plan. You're going to be together for X amount of years, and something happened, somebody got mad, something divided, and suddenly, whoo. Even though financially you're fine, you never thought you'd be at odds with someone like that. How do we navigate that together? Life can sometimes seem so random, so meaningless, and sometimes you can even feel kind of alone. Sometimes the loneliest places are at the top of the ladder. What if you could know that even when shoots come, that it would accomplish a greater purpose, that it's not random or chaotic, there's some meaning behind it all? What if you could know that you're not alone? What if you could think about the opportunities you have as a stewardship, an opportunity in this moment to do the best you can with where you have, but you could be grateful and content at whatever rung you're on? There's a guy named Rick Wiseman. He wrote a book called The Lucky Factor. And he began to examine why some people seem to find luck better than others. And so in one of the experiments they did, they took two people. One considered himself lucky, the other unlucky. They put them both in the same situation to see what would happen. In the experiment, they put a 5-pound note in the sidewalk, just kind of tucked it in there. They hired an actor to be at the bar, who was a businessman, but if you struck up a conversation, ultimately he would talk about a job opportunity that you might be a perfect fit for. So that was the scenario. Two people, the first one considered himself lucky. He's walking in, and the experiment was simply go in, get a drink at a bar, and come out, tell us what happened. He's on his way into the bar, and immediately, on his way into the bar, he notices, hey, a 5-pound note, picks that thing up, wow, it's gonna be a great day. Walks in, orders a drink. He notices a guy sitting at the table, just goes over, hey, good to see you. Hey, what about the game? Talk about the weather, whatever it was. They strike up a conversation. In the midst of that conversation, as they chat a little bit, get to know him, the guy mentions a business opportunity, doesn't know if he's gonna take it, but he's like, man, this was a great chat. Grabs his drink, heads out, says, what a great day. Same experiment with somebody who considered themselves unlucky, comes in, tunnel vision, I'm supposed to get a drink and sit down at the table and leave. Misses the 5-pound note, walks in, grabs the drink, doesn't notice or connect with the people around him, sits down, has a drink, seems like kind of a boring experiment, leaves and comes back and tells the experimenter, yeah, nothing really happened, I got a drink. As they did this experiment in multiple scenarios, they found that lucky people had certain behaviors and attitudes that allowed them to see opportunities around them in any situation. The connections they make, the way in which they see the people around them, created more luck. So luck was something that doesn't happen to you. It's a behavior and mindset you can bring to any up or down in your life. So that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about a lucky attitude. Whether life brings me chutes or ladders, what if you could know that someone controls the game? And even when you're at the bottom of a chute, you know there's a plan that can move you to the next stage. Scholars and archaeologists found the personal handwritten notes of a guy who was a prime minister to a man who ruled the world. When the Babylonians ruled the world, there was an ambassador to Babylon, and we have his personal handwritten notes, verified by multiple sources. What's even more amazing is that he had a successor, and this man, this prime minister, served under him as well. And then Babylon was conquered by another nation called Persia, and they decided to take the same guy who was the prime minister of Babylon and recruit him to be the prime minister of Persia. And we have his personal handwritten notes of when he was at the top of success, at the top of like world empire kind of work as an ambassador. We know exactly his mindset as he navigated these challenges. His name was Daniel. And today, as we look at Daniel's life, we're going to look at, like with chutes and ladders, the spinner, the chute, and the ladder in his life. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Daniel wrote a book of the Bible called the Book of Daniel that is his personal handwritten notes of this experience. He got ripped from his homeland in Jerusalem. Literally, he got ripped away 900 miles from home. He got taken away from his family, taken away from his friends. His whole nation gets destroyed. He gets put into what the Babylonians called the Babylonianize you in this leadership program. And this Jewish teenager quickly ascends the ladder to the point at which he becomes second in command, a personal advisor to the king, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. At the top of the stack, we begin to see the mindset he brings that allows him to really process all the trauma of losing everyone he cares about to also succeeding on a world stage. The spinner. Is there any sense that anyone can really know that someone controls the game of life? That someone controls, there's some ultimate purpose or meaning behind all the chaos that we encounter? Well, Daniel, having encountered a lot of chaos, living in a land he didn't know, a culture he didn't know, has begun to move up the chain of command, and now he's an advisor to the king of Babylon, a man named Nebuchadnezzar. If you don't know who Nebuchadnezzar is, Saddam Hussein so loved Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, he put his face and Nebuchadnezzar's face on a coin together because this was the ultimate moment in the Babylonian history. Well, one day, Daniel records that Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he asks all his advisors to interpret the dream, and none of the Babylonian wise men can interpret this dream. He asks Daniel, and Daniel prays to God and says, God, could you give me a sense of what this dream's all about? And he's able to interpret the dream. Now, before I tell you about the dream, let me give you the point here. What if someone could predict 500 years of world history in detail in advance? I know if someone could do that, it would say, well, somebody's in control in the midst of the chaos. So this is King Nebuchadnezzar, who doesn't even serve the God of the Bible, is recording his dream, and Daniel's going to record it. And here's what the dream is. It's a dream of a statue. The statue has a big gold head, silver arms, and then a bronze waistline. It's going to go beyond that, but it'll be too complicated. I'm just going to tell you about three things he predicts. He actually predicts two more after that. Daniel says to the king, O king, you are king of kings. The God of heaven has given you a kingdom. You are right now in charge of the world, and that's been a stewardship. God's given that to you. Your leadership is a stewardship. But however, after you, you're the head of gold. After you will rise another kingdom inferior to you. Then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. Your leadership is a stewardship. It's given to you to serve and do best for what's who in the world, but you will eventually be replaced. And you're going to be held accountable for your leadership, but it's temporary. So serve well and use your opportunity well, because eventually you will not have the success you have. Well, that had to be a tough message to deliver to the king of the world at the time. Then he says, here's the point. The great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. God wants you to know that there is someone who controls all of history. And as powerful as you are, there is someone more powerful than you. So much so, he's predicting in advance 300 to 500 years of world history. Now, throughout the book of Daniel, in his notes, he gives the specifics. He says, after you, O king of Babylon, is the word Peres. So look at the next verse. It says, Peres, after you, a kingdom called the Medes and Persians. That's why there's two arms in the vision. The Medes and the Persians are going to take over. He mentions it by name, the Medes and the Persians. And that third kingdom is going to be the kingdom of Greece. And that's going to be the king or leader of that group. So again, if someone could predict in advance, hundreds of years, who's going to be king, you might say, that's a pretty impressive track record. This is so impressive, in fact, that Alexander the Great, who becomes that king predicted here by Daniel, is struck by this occurrence. There's a historian by the name of Josephus, he's a Jewish historian, who records what I'm about to share with you. Jewish historian talking what happened with Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great is not real happy with the Jewish people because God also predicted that once the Persians came in and overtook the Babylonians, that the Jewish people would return home. And just as God predicted, Daniel's people end up back at home, back in their homeland, unheard of, exactly as God predicted. So they're back in their homeland 70 years later, and sure enough, Alexander the Great has come to power just like God predicted. He's mad at the Jewish people because they kind of like the Persians, and he's not a big fan of the Persians because they're the current world empire. So Alexander the Great is on his way to Jerusalem to destroy it. And as he does, the priest of the Israeli people have a vision. And in that vision, he says, I want you to line up all the people on the road in all white as Alexander the Great comes into town. And then when he comes into town, I want you to present him the writings of Daniel from the Bible and show him that the God of heaven thought of Alexander the Great hundreds of years before he was born. So sure enough, Alexander the Great comes into town. He's struck by all the people dressed in white, and they're cheering for him. He's coming to destroy the place, and they're cheering for him. As he arrives in Jerusalem, the priest comes out and says, we knew you were coming. We knew Greece would be a world power. Our God predicted hundreds of years in advance, hands him the book of Daniel, and Alexander the Great is struck by this. Not only that there's a God of heaven that predicted Greece would be a world power, which is as silly as me predicting the country of Chad would be a world power in 20 years or 100 years. It'd be unheard of that you think Greece would be a world power. But Alexander also says he had a vision the night before, and in this vision and dream, he foresaw people dressed in white cheering him as he came into Jerusalem. And just as predicted, Alexander did become the king. He did follow the Medes and Persians, and he did not destroy Jerusalem, just as God predicted. Now, you can check all the facts on that, but if that's true, that means life isn't random. It's not chaotic. There's some meaning behind it. And even when things seem out of control, which it would have been for Daniel, that there's someone still orchestrating the stage like a giant chess master above it all. Let me make this more personal. I was at lunch recently with my friend. He gave me permission to tell a story. His name is Dr. Mike Lee. You might know Mike. Mike has recently got a terminal diagnosis on his health, and he's trying to process that. So John and I went to lunch with him, and as we're going to lunch, he just said, you know, I trust that God has a plan. I trust that he's got some purpose to this. I do believe in Jesus, that he came and defeated death, and so I do know that death's not the final hour, but now that I'm facing my own mortality, it's one thing to say that, it's another thing to be here. I'm just not sure what to do. I'm not sure how to handle this. How do I know for sure that God has a plan, even as a doctor, when I know I'm facing a very dire diagnosis? So I asked for a piece of paper from the waitress, and I said, so you have some degree of faith, but you feel like, and I took the paper that I'd given him and I ripped it better than this, apparently. And I said, you feel like, you know, you've got certain doubts right now, and those doubts are kind of ripping apart what you thought was a strong faith. He goes, yeah. I said, you're kind of wondering, I know God's true, but, you know, I want to have more time with my kids and grandkids. It seems very unfair. And is it okay to tell God you think what he's doing to you is unfair and not right? He says, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's kind of how I'm feeling. And I'm trying to get into these different chances to have extra medicines or different trials, and it's not working the way I hoped and wanted. But mostly I want to know for sure, as I'm facing my mortality, that I can know for sure that God's got a plan and that this isn't the end. I said, well, take that piece of paper. Even though you got concerns and doubts and things you're not sure about, let me tell you the one thing you can be sure about. And I handed him this. I said, open that up. He opens it up. I said, keep opening it. He opens it up. I said, keep opening it. He opens it up. I said, there's only one person who came to earth in history, not philosophy or religion, in history, and actually was physically killed and came back to tell us about it. And there's a lot of things we don't understand, a lot of things we're not going to understand, but the one thing you can know for sure is that if you're holding on to Jesus, that everything seemed lost, seemed like the ultimate shoot. There's no way out of this. It looks like everything Jesus said is not true. And he raised himself back from the dead 3 days later. As you're going through this, hold on to the fact that you're holding the one person who defeated death. And that's the one thing you can know. That whatever we don't understand, the one thing we can know is that death can be defeated, not the end. We had lunch a few weeks later, and as he's continued to pray and just continued to work together, as he began to say, man, there's a lot of things I'm not going to understand, but I'm going to trust that God has a plan in this life. I hope it's in this life, but I know for sure it can be in the next. So that's a spinner. What if you knew someone controlled the game? Next, let's look at a shoot. It's one thing when life sends you a shoot. Would you ever purposely take a shoot? Like often the goal of life, I'm a guy who likes to succeed. I like to set goals. I like to accomplish those goals. Would I ever purposely not go up the ladder and take a shoot? Daniel does. Daniel says, I don't mind in success in life. I don't mind in circumstance life. I don't mind going lower if I'm ascribing to a higher principle. One of the challenges of a ladder is if the goal is always to go up the ladder, I make compromises as I go up. Well, you know what? I need to get higher. I was like, well, I never thought I would do this, never thought I'd cross that line, but you know what? If I cross that line up here, I can help more people. And I rationalize and I talk myself into compromises because the goal was to get higher. Daniel has this ability as he gets older because of a decision he made as a teenager that he's willing to let circumstances, temptations take him lower if there's a higher principle he's not going to compromise. Let me take you back to what happened when he's a teenager. It says here in Daniel chapter 1 that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, comes to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Babylonians are also called the Chaldeans. There's a famous painting of the Chaldeans coming and destroying Jerusalem. So Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, comes to Jerusalem and besieged it. And Daniel is taken away, as I mentioned. But he made a decision as a teenager. He purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself in this new land, in this new place. There are certain core convictions, there are certain core ideas he was not going to compromise no matter what came his way. And even when he enters into that Babylonian leadership program, there are certain things he says I will not do, even if it costs me my life, even if I don't go up the ladder, there are certain things I am not going to compromise. Then what was that mindset? Well, it actually ties back to what we learned with the spinner. He realized that seasons are going to come and go, but God's in control. Let me show you on a map where he's at. So Daniel is here in Jerusalem. He gets transported to Babylon, and he's right in the center of world powers. We have Persia over here, Babylon controlling all of this, the Medes over here, and Greece over here. In the midst of that, here's what he realizes. He's going to see in his lifespan from teenager to age 80, kingdoms come and go. He says, and he, God, changes the times and seasons. There's ups and downs in life. He, God, sometimes removes kings, and other times he raises up kings. God gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. I'm not going to build my success on my ups and downs because I've seen enough life to know that God will often change seasons and change times. I'm instead going to keep myself rooted in the higher principle, staying close to the source of wisdom, the source of knowledge, and the one who's in control of all things. Now that's going to become important. Becomes important because, as I said, he ascends to the top of the ladder. He's now prime minister of Babylon. However, the Babylonians then get destroyed by the Persians. I'll talk about that in 2 weeks. And shockingly, when the Persians overtake the Babylonians, you're talking about being kicked off your ladder, right? It's not like the next administration is going to take the guy from the previous administration, but they do. Shockingly, imagine China or Russia taking over America and saying, we're going to keep a couple of your cabinet members. Daniel, having been kicked out of Babylon or out of their leadership, when the Persians take over, they're so impressed with his wisdom and his conviction, he goes back up the ladder and becomes prime minister and second voice to the commander of Persia as well. Well, you can imagine the other Persian leaders aren't real happy that some foreigner that they don't know has taken their job. So they decide to knock him off this ladder. And the one thing they know about Daniel, he's 80, by the way, in the story now. He's 80. They know this guy always thanks God for stuff and always seeks God for wisdom. And they're going to use that against him. So these Persian governors turn to the new king, the king of Persia, and they set a trap, all designed to take Daniel down. So all the governors of the kingdom consulted together to consult a royal statute or command that whoever petitions a god or a man, except for the king of Persia, they're talking to the king here, O king, that man will be thrown into the den of lions. 30 days, no one talks to any god, they only pray to you. Persia's like, that sounds pretty good. I love the idea of people praying to me for 30 days. Now Daniel knew about the writing that this was signed into law in Persian law. He went home that day, and in his upper room, with his windows open as they've always been open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down and prayed three times that day. He prayed and gave thanks before God, as was his custom from early days. Notice that, his custom. Remember, back in a teenager, he decided, the one thing I'm not going to compromise on is God is my source. And I'm going to be grateful, and I'm going to be thankful no matter what comes my way, and I'm going to seek out wisdom. So even when the shoot is going to lead him to a lion's den and loss of his potential life, he's not willing to compromise the higher principle, even if it means coming off the ladder or going down a chute. Do you have any core convictions that are so strong you'd be willing to go down a ladder, even sacrifice your life for that sense of duty and power and might and conviction? Daniel's is so strong, it's what helps him navigate the halls of power and the fear of consequences of losing that power. And sure enough, he is thrown into a lion's den because he refuses to compromise his convictions. He is able, even in the midst of his biggest challenges, at the challenge of his own life, still hold on and find opportunities to seek God and be thankful. Rick Wiseman, in his book on Luck Factor, he mentions that lucky people, people who have a greater sense of purpose, a greater sense of meaning, something outside of just themselves, they're able to see opportunities even in the middle of the biggest challenges in life. He gave another experiment. In this experiment, he had a group of people. Some considered themselves lucky, some unlucky. They were given a newspaper that had pictures on different pages, like newspapers do. And the goal was who could be the fastest to count all the pictures on all the pages. The unlucky people took about 2 to 2.5 minutes, walked up to the board, wrote down the number, 143. Lucky people, they got it done in less than 12 seconds. Why is that? Because as they were flipping through the pages, the unlucky people were just looking for the pictures and counting as fast as they could. The lucky people could see the pictures, but also noticed other big headlines. Like on page 2, it said, stop counting, the number is 143. They could see in the midst of one challenge, there were other opportunities unrelated to the challenge. And a few of the lucky people, not a lot, but a few, also walked up and got a 100-pound note as well. Because there's a little bitty advertisement on the second page that says, if you mention this, we'll give you 100 pounds. And what he realized is that lucky people had a mindset in challenge. They had an attitude in challenge. Yes, there's something going on I'm facing, but there's also other things in the midst of the challenge, other opportunities in the challenge that I might grow, I might learn, I might find opportunities even in the midst of the difficulty. Daniel was able to say, I am going to continue to be thankful to my God and Creator regardless of the consequences. And that's going to give me opportunities. It may not give me opportunities, but I am going to keep that as my focus and my mindset. Do you remember back in April, we had a fighter go down in our battle against Iran. And so this weapons specialist, we get shot down, Americans get shot down, it lands under and beneath, or behind enemy territory. Imagine how terrifying it would be to be behind enemy territory in Iran in the middle of this war. He followed protocol, destroyed the fighter, so none of the technology would go into enemy's hands. Now he knows he's the most hunted man in the world. So that weapons specialist hand climbs up a mountain 7,000 feet, hides himself in the cleft of a rock, because he figures they're going to be trying to get me. At least now they've got to climb 7,000 feet before I go in a gunfight. He tucks himself into this cleft of a rock. He knows Americans are looking for him and the Iranians are looking for him. Finally, he gets a chance to send out his first transmission back to America. And it's three words. God is good. Probably not the first three things I'd be thinking about in that cleft of the rock. But his mindset, with his life on the line, not, boy, it was unfair, I got shot down, where is God, why is this happening to me? God is good. And the Americans come in and rescue him. And when our Secretary of War came and told the story on Easter weekend last year, he said, pretty coincidental, but he was shot down on Good Friday, hiding in a rock on Saturday, and he was rescued on Easter morning. Coincidence? Probably. Pretty amazing, though, that a guy just like Jesus, killed on a Friday, put in a rock tomb on Saturday, and risen from the dead on a Sunday. There's a pattern here. There's a pattern of someone who's able to find hope, even at a time you have to take a shoot. Which brings us to the third, the ladder. Is my success leaning against the right wall? All right, how many times have you seen folks who've walked up the ladder of success, and by all means, they are successful. They are at the top of the stack. Yet they get to the top of the stack, and they realize, wow, I thought this ladder was leaning on that wall. I thought I would be here by then. I thought I'd have those kind of friendships by now. I thought my marriage would be at that place. I thought I'd have this kind of relationship with my kids and grandkids, and instead I'm over here on this wall. This is not where I intended to be. The compromise I made along the way about who I am, although I'm successful in one sense, I'm not where I thought I would be. Daniel, at 80 years old, facing the lions, did not think he'd, in his 80s, having been a prime minister to two world leaders, would end up in that place. But pretty amazingly, he gets even more influence from what happens in the lion's den. You see, the king did not want him thrown in the lion's den. He didn't even connect the dots that his fellow governors were all entrapping Daniel. So he runs to Daniel the next morning to see if he's alive, because he loves Daniel. He's been a friend of his prime minister of his. He's his personal advisor. So he runs and he says, Daniel, are you alive? Are you alive? And here's what Daniel says to him the next morning, because he is still alive. God, my God, sent his angel and shut the lion's mouths, so they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. Now the king, this is king of Persia now, was exceedingly glad for him, commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. And then now this Persian king, not a follower of the God of the Bible, is so struck by seeing someone who had such conviction, they're willing to face their own death by a lion, what a way to die. He's so struck by the power and the courage of this moment that Persian king makes this decree. I make a decree that in every domain of my kingdom, men tremble and fear and awe over the God of Daniel. For he, this God, is a living God. He works signs and wonders in heaven and earth, and he has delivered Daniel from the power of the lion. And that shoot that seemed like the worst moment in history is probably the most well-traveled story about Daniel in history to this day, a man who faced the lions and God raised, kept him from dying. See, success for him is I'm going to be faithful to my God and my convictions regardless of what's threatened me. And that's what kept him at the top of the ladder. And his influence goes up after this experience, not down. When I lived in Atlanta, I had a friend of mine who owned this big farm. And on this farm, they did a lot of corporate events. Sony and others brought all their employees out there. One month, he had bought lions to add to his farm. It's like you pet the goats over here, you go see the lions. He walks me over to this lion cage, and it was a cage inside of a cage, but it was chain link fence. So you go inside the first cage, and he says, here's the new lions. They're Persian lions, he said, the same kind of lions that Daniel faced in the book of Daniel in the Bible. Then he says, hey, preacher, you got any faith? Why don't you go into the second gate? I said, you know, the lions and Christians have had a long history. And from my records, the lions are way ahead in the scoreboard right now of all the ways Christians. There's one time that God did supernaturally deliver one guy from the lion's den. I'm going to play the odds here and not step into that. So this is not some message about how God always saves people, because most of the time he doesn't. But it's a story of one man who's a picture of the ultimate man who would go face to face with death on a cross. And when no one thought there was a way out and no one thought it could be defeated, Daniel becomes a picture of the ultimate one who could defeat death, a person who was given temptations in all ways and did not give in to those temptations, who was a leader on the world stage, Jesus, a descendant of Daniel, who was able to show us what a life without temptation looks like. And many people would say Daniel, a teenage boy from Jerusalem, ends up being prime minister to two world leaders, like no one has ever heard, and we have his personal notes. Man, that guy was lucky. Maybe. Maybe he had a lucky attitude that said, whether I face the chutes or the ladders, maybe his real secret was the belief that he knew someone who controlled the game. So to begin the series today, I'd like you to think about those three categories: the spinner, the chute, and the ladder. If there is no God and there is no destiny and God is not involved in the world at all, maybe he wound it up in nothing else, then everything you've accomplished, everything you do, it's all up to you. If it's all up to you, then how could you not be overwhelmed with that sense of responsibility? That you're really in charge of fixing everything. No wonder you were worried or anxious or trying to judge people to keep track who needs judges. If there is no God, and it's just science, then we are just a result of the neurons in our head and our biochemistry, then we have no agency. We just do what we've been pre-programmed to do. There's no freedom, there's no choice. If there's no freedom and choice, then you're not accountable because you didn't make the decisions. Well, we don't live like that. We don't believe that. We don't believe that we have no agency or freedom. But we also don't want to think it's all up to me. Somewhere here in the middle is this blending of God is in control, but he's given us freedom, and those two things work together. That is where life can be lived best, there in the middle. Some of us define peace in life by no chutes. No chutes are going to happen. I'm going to control life. If I get successful enough, I'm going to control no chutes happening in my life. Good luck. Now, the more you get up the ladder, the more you can control a lot of small chutes, but health crises, relational conflict. How exhausting is it to try and control everything and think, I will have peace if I could just say no chutes in my life? On the other hand, on the other side, you see folks, every time they have a chute, they're depressed, they're hopeless. Oh my goodness, I just collapsed by it. I don't want to be hopeless when a chute comes, but I want to define myself by my need for no chutes. Somewhere in the middle is, I know chutes will come, but I know someone can work in the midst of the chutes. And it's not me. I'm trusting something greater than myself. It brings this peace there in the middle. And ladders. Is everything you ever did just luck? You don't need to be grateful for anyone for your talent, your successes. You did it. It's all luck. Yeah, some people are lucky, some are not. Or on the other side, is it all ego? No, no, no. I did it all. There's no luck. There's no destiny. I accomplished it all. How does that not create ego and pride? But here in the middle is, I have done an awful lot of work to get where I am today on the ladder. But man, that comes with a sense of gratitude that I had certain talents and opportunities, was born in this country at this time. Man, as I go up the ladder, there's a greater sense of stewardship to my leadership. I'm accountable to it. Eventually, I'm not going to have this job. Someone will come along. I'm not defined by what rung I'm on. I just want to do the best I can to serve others while I'm on that rung. There in the middle is this combination of, yes, I want to be responsible and successful, but also there's something bigger than me. Call it luck, call it God, but when those two things come together, I get filled with gratitude and joy that there's something bigger than me. As the band comes out to do this next song, what I love about this next song is it's really a reminder that if it's all up to us, we're always striving. I got to make it happen. I got to do it. I got to accomplish it. And I'm all for accomplishing a lot of stuff, let me tell you. But I've also worn myself out trying to accomplish things that are outside of the control of a mere human. It's this blending of, God, I want to do my part, and I want you to do your part, and show me what life looks like side by side together. That's the best way to live life. Not lazy, I'm successful. But I'm also combining with some greater sense of power and purpose of someone who controls the world. Can use the good things I've done, but can also use the bad things I've done to accomplish a greater purpose. Listen to this next song and see if it speaks to you. What if that's true? I mean, what if? You're like, well, I don't know if I believe that. Yeah, but what if there was somebody who controls the universe who says, stop fighting me. I want to be part of you. I want to offer you some peace. Wouldn't that be kind of nice? Wouldn't you at least want that to be true? If it is true, take it from a guy who is a personal advisor to two world empires, Daniel. What was the practice he had? Every day, several times a day, he was grateful to God, said thanks. And number two, he asked for wisdom for life. What if you tried that just this week? A couple times a day, middle of your regular life, hey, need some help down here. Hey, would love an idea here. God, thanks for my mouth. Thanks for my ears. Thanks for my eyes. God, thanks for my wife. Thanks for my family. Thanks for my health. How might life be differently? Just several times a day, you were grateful and asked for wisdom. I said, God, if you are there, and I'm not sure if you are, show me and show up in my life. Let's pray together. God, for those of us who are here today and we're just not sure about this whole thing, but we're open, God, I ask that you would just answer that prayer. As we are grateful, fill us with peace. As we ask for wisdom, give us direction. God, we want to navigate this crazy game of life as best we can, but we need someone's help to do it, Father. Someone smarter than us, someone wiser than us, someone more patient than us. And we ask for each person here that you would help them as they navigate that. In Jesus' name, amen.